Every single day, people take unwanted or unused items to thrift and antique stores across the country. But as the saying goes, one man's trash is another man's treasure, and we're here to prove it. Identify valuable things before you throw them away. Join us as we show and tell of treasures found and sold by a full-time reseller with the hopes of helping you find some treasures of your own. Welcome to the What's Sold podcast.
Welcome back to the What's Sold podcast. Once again, I am Brandon with my good friend Matt, the ultimate secondary market retailer or merchant. Or whatever we want to call him, merchant, retailer. We're making this sophisticated. That's what we're doing. We're sophisticants.
Mm-hmm. So that's right.
We are going to be with you today. A little bit shorter today. Matt and I tend to banter along, and we want to get right to the brass tacks today.
That's right.
But Matt, what are we going to be talking about today? I think I know this one. I feel like it's unwrapping a Christmas gift, and I'm pretty sure I've been shaking the box. I'm mm-hmm. pretty sure I know this, but I'm not exactly sure.
So I'm going to give an update on an item that we talked about in the previous episode.
Oh, okay.
I'm going to show a couple things that I sold. And then the rest of the episode, I'm going to share where I source my items.
Oh, good.
So all the time I get these questions, where are you finding the stuff at? That's a great question. I'm going to answer it today.
Yeah, good.
Let's start off. I want to show you this mandolin.
Oh, I remember this little bad boy.
We got this thing done. I finished getting it sanded, refinished. I left stuff like the headstock and things and the neck, sort of the natural color. I didn't stain them. I made the body look. This is a 100-year-old man. This is a 1928. This is nearly a 100-year-old mandolin. It looks like it's 500 years old now.
Oh, yeah.
This is what they call road worn. Like it looks like I pulled this out of a barn under some hay. And oh, does this still work? I'm really.
Is there a way to stain it to make it look new?
Oh, sure. I absolutely can do it.
Okay.
This was more, I wanted to see if, because the tuners on it, the floating bridge and the tailpiece are all replacement parts because the other ones, it was just beat up. It was just in terrible condition. And so.
Can you play us a little ditty?
No, not really. I can play some chords for you. It sounds good. It's got a good sound to it. Anyways, the point is I paid $400 for this and it's probably $800 or $900
wow.
instrument now that I've got it in working condition. So that's fun. That's me putting my creative side and my interest in instruments
that's awesome.
To the test whenever I get things.
Will you keep us posted when you sell it? And if I know you say that
absolutely.
I sell it, but then shockingly, these instruments just seem to be piling up behind you as you're like, someday I'll sell it. I definitely am going to sell it, but it sounds so good.
Man, when you find instruments and they just really sound good, it's true that if I sell a thing and I decide I want it again, I can find that thing almost always. The things I get are rare, but not so rare that you're never going to find one again in your lifetime mm-hmm. kind of thing or be able to afford it. So yeah, this is one of those that is fun to have. I won't lose sleep over it if I sell it. There's actually another mandolin right now for sale that I found that it's probably a good buy, but I'm not going to bring myself to buy it unless I sell this first because I need to use that money. Okay, I'll show a couple things that I sold. They're both in the same genre here. These are just little ratchets. Wrenches,
yeah.
And one has the little bit on the side of it too. One is a Channel Lock brand, and one is a Craftsman brand. These both sold for $20 each. So these are the kinds of things you can find at thrift stores and stuff a lot of times.
That's an interesting one because is that top piece that's there, that big clunky part of the top? Does that come off or is it on the thing?
It does.
Okay.
I don't know
if I've ever seen it. It's like that is basically what you would see on a drill motor or a drill press.
Yeah.
You know, where you,
it's if you, exactly. If you rotate it, you can hold on to a bit essentially.
Yeah.
That's cool. The ratcheting wrench operates like normal. You can put other attachments on it, but it just came like this. So I thought it's cool. It's the same brand as it was made for the specific brand mm-hmm. of this torque wrench. $20. Sometimes I'll go to pawn shops that have just tons of loose tools. People come in with toolboxes and like, hey, what do you want? I need to sell. They're just trying to get quick money.
Mm-hmm.
Here's this tool. They'll pull out all of the stuff. If there's some really nice old name brand stuff, they'll sell them individually. They sell the toolbox by itself individually. And then they throw these things like pliers and screwdrivers and wrenches in these big bins. And there's just tons of them. I come along and they only want $2 or $3. If I buy 10 or 15 things at once, then if it says $3, then they're going to give it to me for $2, right? They give me a discount on it. So all the time, I could go once a week and buy these little Craftsman torque wrenches or these things. And I'm paying $2 to $3 a piece for them. And they always sell for $20 to $24.
Wow.
That's easy. You just go out to a pawn shop.
Why wouldn't you just do that as your full-time business?
You certainly could, provided you have enough places to go around you that you could go weekly and get more things. So yeah, it's easy. Those are easy sales. These particular ones I actually got out of an estate sale where I bought maybe 200 tools. I've long since made all my money back, so I have no cost of goods in these. So it's nice. I factor in these are never going to cost more than $4 or $5 to ship. So it was probably like $3.89 or $4.20 per to ship it. Mm-hmm. A bubble mailer or a little thing is going to cost me like 75 cents. And there you go.
Cool.
And that's the shipping.
Awesome.
So I build it in.
Oh, I like the tool thing. I would do that as my side hustle because I love tools. But I'd be like you. I'd be like, the wall behind me would be filled with thousands of tools. But like, nah, I'm going to sell all these someday. I promise you, I will sell them.
But yeah. I have to, sometimes I sell them in lots because sometimes I get more in faster than I can sell them individually. So I'm like, I really need to move this. So I'm just going to do a Craftsman lot. Here's five Craftsman tools, or here's five vintage, whatever it could be,
right?
Chisels or whatever it is.
Yeah. At some point we should talk about, there's a company I love. I absolutely love. I will shamelessly plug them, even though I get nothing from them, but they're called Sweetwater and they sell a lot of used music equipment and sound. Yeah. For me, it's sound equipment. They're amazing. And I'm sure what they do is I don't even know where, I'd be curious to know how they source and get their stuff, but I'd be very curious to talk at some point. We need to do a show on where do these people get their stuff? Like, where does this come from?
And yeah.
I'm sure knowing, again, knowledge is power. That's what we're trying to do on this show, is to bring that knowledge to people. So if what somebody's doing, for instance, I always talk about cars. If you understand how cars are purchased at a dealership, you're in a much better place of dealing with that than if you don't know. Oh, they just ship them off of a tank. No, they don't. So anyway, maybe for a future show, but I love that. Those tools are cool.
Yeah, it's just an easy thing. It's just one of those things in the back of my mind. When I go in a place and I'm rolling through the different sections of a store, when I'm in a clothing area, I know certain things I'm looking for. When I'm in the ceramics and the plates and the utensils, I have certain things I'm looking for. And it's the same when I'm back where the sports equipment and the tools and things are. I have certain brands or certain items mm-hmm. that I've sold before and I know. And so, but those are things that are readily available around most people, which is why I wanted to share them.
Cool. All right.
Today, let's talk about the big question, like the million-dollar question, which is, where do you get this stuff? Like, you've got all these things you sell. For those who maybe are not familiar with really the background, I'm not going to get into it heavily, but I'm a full-time person who buys and sells things. I do six-figure sales on eBay. This will be the third or fourth year that I've been selling at that volume as one person. I don't have, this year, I started to employ a person to sell some things in another eBay store that I opened, but this is all me. Things that I'm sourcing, 98% of the things that I sell, I find myself in stores that I go to. The rest I might source online for something if I find a good deal. And I live in Western North Carolina. I live in a semi-populated area, but certainly not a major city. Mm-hmm. I'll drive as far as 45 miles to an hour around me as my catchment area. And I go to different places. The list of places, and I'll talk on each one of them in depth. I'll not spend a ton of time, but thrift stores, antique stores, pawn shops, estate sales, auctions, and then online auctions or on sales platforms online like eBay and Etsy. That's where I'm sourcing my items.
Huh.
Sometimes I sell for friends or people around me.
Me.
In that case,
me.
Sometimes you. I have no cost of goods in that. So that part of the advantage of a business model of doing consignment sales or working with individuals or businesses to help them sell is that you don't have to spend time driving around. You're not spending gas money. Mm-hmm. You're working directly with someone. The inventory is already built in. You're not having to find it once you make a relationship and set that up. And you're not having to put any money out there,
right,
which is awesome. Because floating money and knowing when to spend and when to save is a big part of this business, and that can become difficult. In this way, you completely remove that from the equation, and it's just your time and your work. So you work out whatever take you get when it sells and whatever they get, and it has to be a win for both of you. I like working with thrift stores, let's say, for example, like local in my community, because I like the idea of helping someone. And listen, if you're someone who's interested in getting into this and haven't done it a whole lot, but you do have some knowledge, or maybe you've been doing it a while and you're like, competition's getting more intense and the costs are going up, I encourage you to go into some of these stores that you already go to and just strike up a conversation and see if they need help. If you're a person that runs a thrift store, consider working with one of these resellers that comes in your shop. If you can trust them, I mean, start off, you got to start small and you got to build that rapport. But what they essentially would be getting is a skilled laborer for free because they don't have to pay. You become almost like a contract employee for them. You come in and evaluate their nicer things, silver and gold jewelry or like really rare antiques, and they can sell them for you online. All of a sudden now, this tiny little town in Western North Carolina has a global exposure for people who want to buy that thing. Somebody in China might buy it or Australia. And now you're not relying on just a person walking in the door. If you get something in a thrift store and it's worth $2,000, selling online for $2,000, even if you list that at 50%, $1,000, how many people are walking in a thrift store with $1,000 they're ready to spend on something? Like, not that many. People come in the thrift stores I go to because it's 30% off of clothing day. Or things like that. That's what they're
30% off of a dollar shirt.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And because I love it. I absolutely love it. Reuse these things. Find ways to cut costs. You can find name brand clothing at thrift stores. But the point is, there are avenues where you could get into an interaction with somebody, build a business around selling things that aren't yours, selling things for other people. It helps them out. They're going to make more off of the item because you're selling it to somebody online and you're going to make more for it. And it's going to be a win. Yeah. You can make some money and not drive it around.
Yeah, great point.
So thrift stores is a place I buy at. I do what I just described to you, I have done in the past and hope to continue to do is to work with people as a part of the business as well. So thrift stores, they're local. The idea is all the items that they get have been donated to them. So they have no cost of goods either. Mm. The stuff just comes to them. If they get some really nice stuff, they're making more. If they get really bad stuff, they're making less, or then they have to figure out what to do with the stuff that doesn't sell that sat there for 6 months. But the thing that's good about thrift stores is that a lot of them you can go to multiple times a week because they're getting so much stuff so often that you can go on a Monday when they open or a Tuesday, you can circle back around Thursday or Friday and there's probably going to be some new items for you to look at. It's not going to be the same. Not every place is like that. It depends on the size. Here's the next level. If you're in a larger area, more populated area, look at the demographics of the area and find the thrift stores that are in the richer neighborhoods.
Yes.
because guess what? The value of items that wealthy people have, this may blow your mind, are oftentimes more valuable than the items that people who don't have as much money. And guess what? The person who's rich, let's just say, for example, or more affluent, they're not driving 30 minutes to a thrift store on the other side of town to donate it. No, they're looking up, what's the closest one to me? And they're driving and dropping it off there.
Yeah, when I lived in San Francisco, I'm not even embarrassed to admit this. You drive down the street, you would see really nice furniture and things, like a wooden chair. So the people just didn't want to deal with, so they would put it out on the street. So there are ways to source, if you're in these bigger metropolitan areas, where you can actually find stuff, if you're paying attention, that's valuable. And I don't mean like this is chintzy, tchotchke, IKEA stuff that's broken apart. I'm talking about really high-end stuff that, this is sad to say, but sometimes rich people just don't care. So they put it out on the curb,
sure,
and you can grab it. So yeah, there's lots of opportunities.
The good thing about thrift stores is that the volume is so high that there's different things coming in all the time.
Right.
The downside of going to buy things at a thrift store is that, I can't remember where I read this, but something like 90 or 95% of the items that are donated to a thrift store are worth $30 or less. So if you know that going in, the bar is not real high, right?
Right. Like
the chances that you're going to find that something in that 5% or 10% of the total of things that are in there that are worth more than $30, you're going to find it before someone else who's looking for valuable items found it. The chances are less if you're not experienced and you don't know what to look
for.
So that's the downside. But I go to thrift stores a lot. The next place I go to are antique stores. Now, oftentimes antique stores are going to be across the board more expensive. Like items, they've probably researched them. They've taken the time to write them out. It's not like an unskilled laborer at a thrift store that's maybe just donating their time and they don't care. They're just looking at a chart. Okay, costume jewelry is $3. It goes in this basket. Artwork is over here. You know what I mean? But in an antique store, this is something that belonged to them personally and they want to sell it, but it meant more to them than to just donate it or to sell it online. Maybe they don't care about that. So they're doing the research and they're marking it at what they want to get out of it. But antique stores have antiques. And that's what I deal in primarily, is antiques and collectibles. And there are people who don't do their research very well and price things too low. Maybe they'll put some gold jewelry in and set the price based on what the current market value of gold is. And then a year later, gold has gone up $5 a gram. And this is like a 20 gram thing. So all of a sudden, they put in, I'm not selling a lot. I'm going to put across the board 20% off of my booth. And they forgot they have gold jewelry in there. Mm. So now I'm going to get to walk in. Gold has already appreciated since they priced it. And I'm getting 20% off of that. All of a sudden now, I stand to make $400 or $500 off of this piece of jewelry because they just didn't think about it. So there are some ways that I can capitalize on some things that are in those stores. Or again, people will have things in there they don't know a lot about. Here's some old eyeglasses, $5. They don't know that they're gold filled and that I can sell them regularly for $20 to $25 a piece. Boom, that's a purchase for me.
What about things that you go into I always think antique stores is overhyped thrift shops, but I know there's a lot. There are some really nice antique stores here in Western North Carolina. But did you ever see an item and you're like, it's in bad condition, but like you did with your mandolin, and you say, I put X amount of time into it, it's going to be worth 10X what I'm paying for it. Does that ever happen to you? I'm sure it does, but I'm just curious how often that happens.
All the time.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, all the time.
Okay.
It doesn't mean I buy it. All the time I'll see things, and it's always a calculation of like, what's happening this week? Do I have the time to get into this? Would it be a month before I can work on it? Do I want to float that money for a month? When I get it done, is it going to sell in a week? Is it going to sell in 3 months? So there's always a calculation of what's my time worth?
Mm-hmm.
What else is going on? How long can I float this money? Do I need that money for something else that's coming up? Like sometimes I'll see something on a Monday and I'll think, I could do this. I could buy it. It might take 2 months. Alternatively, I know there's an estate sale coming up on Friday that I plan on going to. And if I go there and I see a bunch of stuff, I'm going to want the money available to purchase stuff there. And so I'm always there. Sometimes you have to make decisions without knowing the future. Like a lot of the times you do the best you can, but you don't know what you're going to find tomorrow. But there will always be things available. It's just a matter of whether or not you want to get them. So antique stores, thrift stores are probably the two types of places I go to the most.
Okay.
I also go to estate sales and auctions. So it can range from, it's just a person's house. They open it up. You come in, some things are priced, and you just collect things you want and you buy them. Or you haggle with them over price if that's your method. Auctions could be anything from like a silent auction to where the Habitat for Humanity Restore in Asheville has these bi-monthly. They have a section where they have a book and everything is in a glass case and they have a number and you just write in the book what you're willing to pay. And when it ends, whatever the highest bid is, you get a phone call, you come and buy it. I bought some stuff last week at one. All the way to the old school auction where there's an auctioneer and he's talking really fast and everything's out on a table and they start at 5 p.m. and they go until everything is sold. And you don't know what order things are coming out at. You don't know.
Yeah.
Those are all cool in their own way. I don't usually stay around for those. I usually do absentee bids. So I come in and preview and I write down in a piece of paper what I'm willing to pay. I don't want to stand around because that keeps me from making an impulsive decision to bid over what I know my stopping point should be. And all of these places are within 15 to 20 minute drive of me. There are thrift stores, there are antique stores, there are auctions. And I know ones in my region that happen once a month. I know ones that happen every other week. And I follow them on Facebook pages. I follow them stuff. I'll get email notifications. Hey, it's starting up in 2 days. And so I plan my week around. Do I want to hit this one? Do I not? And this is also based on just experience. Have I been there before and found good deals? Have I made money when I go to these places? Bought things that make sense? Or is this the kind of place that's just like too overpriced? There are ones that I maybe hit once every 6 months, just wondering if there's some turnover in some of those booths. But I only go to them every once in a while because they're just too, there is no deal. Like it's the kind of place where you go if you want a nice thing you want to keep. It's not for me because I'm trying to make money off of things that are undervalued. And the last thing I'll say is like yard sales. Now that it's spring and summer, those are going to start picking up.
Wait a second, sir.
Okay.
Hold on a moment here. When you grew up in the great state of Missouri, and what do they call those yards? Did they call them yard sales where you're from? Do you remember?
They called them yard sales, I would say. I'm trying to think. What did they call them in your area?
I grew up out west, and they called them yard sales or garage sales. A lot of them were called garage sales.
Yeah, they would call them garage sales
but
as well.
Yep, if you go to the northeast of this country, they're called tag sales. And I was like, tag sale? And a tag sale, I guess where the name derives from is that you'd write the price down on it and put it on. I was like, I guess that makes sense. I only say that because I thought that was interesting regionally they're going to, the same exact thing has a different name, but anyway, I digress.
Oh, yeah. No, that's cool. So yeah, yard sales, tag sales, whatever they call them in your area, but it's essentially people are just selling out of their yard or out of their, they open up their home. They're usually on the weekend or on Fridays. Sometimes they're a 3-day, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, or Friday, Saturday, Sunday. If you want to get in that, there are some of the best deals to be had are probably at, I would say, either like auctions, like estate sales and or yard sales. Mm-hmm. Because in both cases, the impetus for them selling a thing is that they have a problem or they have a need. So a thrift store, they sell stuff because people are just cleaning out house and they send it there. Antique stores, people have things that they think are valuable and they want to make money, like good money, mm-hmm. and they're willing to let it sit for a long time. But yard sales and estate sales, like an estate sale happens because someone has passed away usually, mm-hmm. and they have a bunch of stuff that they don't need or want. They just need to move it. They're okay selling it for under. They don't even care what the real value is. They're just going to let mm-hmm. the market dictate that. They're just going to move it. Yard sales, it's like, I got a bunch of crap in my house and I want
to clean it out. Spring cleaning.
I want this out of here. I want to get this out. I want to, oh, it's this per item, but it's this for the whole, it's $2 an item. It's $20 for the whole box. And if you buy the whole box, then you're getting it for 10 cents a piece.
Right.
Like, why would I pay $2 when I can get it for $2.10
right,
cents a piece?
Right.
I'm going to buy the whole thing. But that's where you get really good stuff. People pull out old instruments. Oh, this belonged to my grandfather. It's been in my closet or under the bed for 10 years. I'm never going to play it. They just were honest with themselves for a moment. Mm-hmm. I'm never going to play this. I need to just get rid of it. And all of a sudden, it's like a 1950s Les Paul or something. And they want $2,000 and they think that's a big price. And you're like, this is a $30,000 instrument. No, I've never done that, but I've heard of stories. I've seen people come across with like amazing things at these. And again, it's because the person selling it is not skilled at researching it properly.
Right.
And that's a big, why can I do what I do? There's a few reasons, but chiefly because I know how to quickly identify and research things. It's a big part of it.
Mm-hmm.
So how do I get these things? These are the places I go, but just because you go there and that item happens to be there doesn't mean you're going to find it or that you're going to know the value when you see it. So there's more that goes into mm-hmm. it, obviously, but there is no, I don't have a magic, there's no magic poof. Like I have some awesome entry into this market of collectibles that only I have and that other people can't know. I do have some connections to some people more on the backside of things. Once I've found a thing, I have buyers. I know people who buy or collect certain items. So sometimes I can contact them before I get on and throw it on eBay, but that's after I've already bought it. So I'm just going to the same places that you would go to, Brandon.
Right.
If you were looking for something, places in the community.
Let me ask you two questions in our last few minutes here, because I know we're up on time, but number one, where do flea markets stand in the lexicon of sourcing?
You think that they sell fleas, don't you, at flea markets?
Why would you buy
a Seinfeld?
Why would you buy
it was a Seinfeld episode.
Was.
Yeah, he's asking you, George, what do you think of, what do you think they sell at flea markets? And he's like, you think they sell fleas? And he's like, yeah, I think they sell fleas, or something like that. That's great.
I know that there's a couple big ones around here. That's why I asked.
Flea markets, a flea market, in my mind, flea markets and antique stores are interchangeable.
Mm.
Okay, so a flea market, it's like the idea, I guess the idea is that a thing that's old might have fleas on it. I don't know actually what the etymology of that coming into being is, but if you see a big place, a big sign, flea market, antiques, collectibles, you got to be careful. I use my gut. If I go into one of these big stores, in the first 3 or 4 stalls are more crafty things.
Mm.
Something someone's put together. There's nothing wrong with that. There are people who want that. That's not what I'm looking for, though. I'm looking for genuine antiques and collectibles,
right.
Not something that was made this year.
Got it.
Out of old things. That's not mm-hmm. what I... If I go in and I see that, or if things are really high priced, and this is like a gigantic Walmart Supercenter sized building, I'll only spend 5 minutes. I'll look around and be like, this is not for me. Because you can just get pulled in, because it will still have nice items.
Right.
But it's just like there's no money to be made on any
okay.
of it. And if it's a litmus test in the beginning, is this going to pan out? If in the first 5 minutes, not.
Yeah, because some people are actually going there to buy items that they want.
Sure.
It doesn't yep. necessarily have to be for the reseller.
Oh, yeah.
But because ultimately, all these places are selling things to people that want
to keep
them.
Well, and they're not. None of these places are for the reseller.
Right.
Nobody
right.
is wanting to sell to the reseller unless you treat them well and you can be
right.
a return customer.
Right.
And there's thrift stores that I buy at regularly. They've made thousands of dollars from me over the last few years. They've made even more from me in donations. Like, I'll maybe buy 20 items in a 2-week period, but I've donated 100 items
right.
to them. So they're making money both ways for me. And that's fine. That's great.
Yeah.
But they know me and it's good for me to come in. They're just like, they see me like, oh, hey. And they're thinking, yeah, he's probably going to buy some stuff today. And I probably am.
Last question, and then we're out of here. I know you say you basically source within a 45-mile radius of where you live, but do you ever is there ever a reason why you would travel to source?
Yes, I have traveled before. I've taken a trip to Florida.
Oh.
So I live in North Carolina. I've taken a full week. I've gone down there with my friend Nate Peaches from the Rusty the Reseller YouTube channel. We went down there, and the purpose of that was to source and also to create YouTube videos from that experience. I've gone to Wilmington, North Carolina, on the coast. I was actually going there just to visit some friends with my family. We do it once a year. And while I was there, on Facebook Marketplace, I was just like, you know, because if I go to a place and I can source some things, that's a tax write-off. Like, that's a business sure. expense. So I found, and I still had to drive 2 hours from there north because I found somebody selling like their childhood collection of vintage Star Wars toys.
Ooh.
And the way that story went is I drove up there, I bought all of his Star Wars stuff, and then a bunch of his G.I. Joe stuff. And I had more stuff than I could get home with my family. I had tubs of stuff. So I had to rent a U-Haul trailer that you hitch on to your vehicle. And I filled that thing up.
I'm sure you were the most popular dad in town.
It was incredible. But I made thousands of dollars profit off of that when it was all said and done, like the next 6 months. So yeah, I'll do that. I'm thinking right now about going up to New York, like the Hamptons or something.
Oh.
And for the same reason I said before, go to the rich area.
Yeah.
Hit a bunch of thrift stores in the area where it's like the most affluent.
Let's set up our podcast and interview rich people why they're giving away this fancy stuff.
Yeah. When I do this, if I do this, I'll come back and I will give, because it's an experiment, right?
Yeah.
I'm always going to be able to make YouTube videos from it, and that if I put it on a monetized channel, then hopefully I can make some money from that eventually.
Yeah.
But yes, I'll travel. I'm going to go to the UK next year.
What?
I'm going to go there. I'm going to go for a week to source and do some stuff. And then my family is going to join me a week later.
Oh,
so we'll talk about that. But
that's exciting.
That'll be my first across the big pond sourcing
trip. That's awesome. But, well, we don't have a lot of pictures from this show because I'm probably not going to post a picture of a thing, but I will put up the items.
A couple of ratchet wrenches here.
Remember to check out our Facebook, What's Sold Podcast on Facebook. Remember to subscribe. Makes it easier to find it the next time. If you find us somewhere, subscribe to us, write a review. We always appreciate that. Otherwise, we'll be back with brand new episodes in the next couple of weeks. We really appreciate you guys listening. Any last words, Matt?
Yeah, just look out for those fleas when you're at the flea market.
Yeah, darn it, I got fleas again at the market. All right, have a great day, Matt.